Hello, everyone. My name is Patrick LeBlanc, your host, and welcome to Insights Tomorrow, brought to you by Microsoft. Let's deep dive with leaders and innovators in the data space. We're going to explore the challenges, the opportunities that organizations face in their data journeys. In each episode, we will invite some data leaders, experts, and some practitioners who share their unique perspectives on how data transformation is changing their business. Let's explore this data journey together and what it means to you. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Insights Tomorrow. I'm your host, Patrick LeBlanc, and today we're going to be discussing deciphering data architectures with Mr. James Serra. James, before we get started, why don't you tell the people who you are and what you do?
Sure. James Serra. I am a data and AI technical specialist at Microsoft. I've been here 9 years. And in this role, I spend most of my time talking with customers. I happen to be in the federal civilian area, so a lot of U.S. government customers where I do knowledge transfer. I tell them about data architectures and the products that would fit in for their particular use case.
Data architectures. Before we kind of get into the questions, what inspired you to, you know, write a book on deciphering data architectures?
I had written a book like 10 years ago and I vowed never to do it again because it was so difficult and time consuming.
Yeah.
But somebody mentioned, hey, when I started talking about all these data architectures, you should write a book about this. And the more I thought about it, I said, well, I'm passionate about it, so maybe the work to write it won't be as bad. And then I viewed it as, this is a way to sort of put my life experience into a book. This is everything that I've accumulated almost over 40 years in the IT industry consumed in this book. And I always felt like it's leaving like a legacy, a personal stamp. And with my brain is like dumping into this book. And so I saw it as something that would be easier in that most of what's in the book was already either in a blog post I've written, in decks that I presented in, or just sitting in my brain. And it's just a matter of getting it all out. Now, it's challenging writing a book, as you know, that you can spend 2 hours and you get like a page and you're like, wait, yeah, all this. And let's just say the pay is not very enticing when writing a book.
No.
I'm not going to be in a world tour with Stephen King. I'm not going to buy picking out different colors of Lamborghinis on this. I don't know if I even make minimum wage on it. However, there's other benefits, obviously, in building your brand. But I felt a great sense of accomplishment. The book, it just got delivered a couple of days ago. And so I was really proud of the fact that I was able to accomplish this that I set out a year and a half to do, and that my life's work is sort of in this book.
Nice. So data architectures, you and I, right, this is just the world we live in. We've been living in this world for a very long time. Like you said, 40 years for you, probably about 30, 35 for me, right? And so in your mind, what are the key components of a data architecture? And why do you feel it's so important for an organization to have a well-defined data architecture?
And the last part, if you don't have well-defined architecture, you'll find out either halfway through it that you did something terribly wrong, or I've seen cases, and I'm sure you've had, and I won't mention any names, but there was one company that built an architecture, spent nearly $100 million, and realized, uh-oh, this is not the right architecture. It's too complex. Nobody's using it. Let's start from scratch. Well, probably want to avoid a $100 million mistake. So it's important to think through and spend even just a decent amount of time up front could save you not only tons of money, but tons of time on that. And because the technology changes so much, architecture concepts come and go, it's really important to understand all of this. And I saw just a lot of confusion out there. And that's a big reason why I wrote the book, was I could reach more people to make them understand not only architectures, but the concepts involved and the trade-offs. Everything's got trade-offs. And if you listen to the vendors, they'll say like, hey, buy our product and all your problems will be solved. Well, the reality is no matter what architecture you choose, there's going to be trade-offs and you need to be aware of those.
Yep. And so once we have this well-defined architecture, as we think about defining this well or defined architecture, a lot of times you got to choose. Do you want a data lake? Do you want a data warehouse? Do you need both? Is it a data mart? Is it going to be a mesh? Or are we going to use fabric and just put them in one place? You know, how do you make that decision? And how do you determine what's the difference? You know, what's the difference between a warehouse and a lake house and fabric and all these different things?
Yeah, and what you're asking is what I heard on a daily basis with customers. They'd be like, oh, we want to build a data mesh. Well, do you know what that is? I don't know. We think so. Well, you know what? Even know what a lake house is, a fabric? Yeah. Maybe not. Okay, well, do you understand some of the concepts that go into it? And then I'd ask them the questions, and then like, oh, I don't know if we know the difference between ETL or ELT or batch processing or data marts. And so I said, oh, when I write the book, I should also have about the concepts in there. And so then it comes down to understanding that it's not as if I can ask a bunch of questions and I'm going to go through like a flowchart and like, okay, boom, here's what you're going to want to build. Every customer is different. Every architecture is different. And I'm not even getting to the technology. It's just the layout of the steps, kind of what you talked about. The commonality is ingest, store, transform, model, and visualize is what you go through. And that's been that way since the 80s with building a data warehouse in there. But the approaches have changed on there. And understand all of the options you have in an architecture. And usually you want to do that through maybe start out with an architect design session, which I did hundreds of those. And at first I was just going to write a page or two in the book about that. And then I said, well, this could be a whole chapter in explaining what an ADS is, an architect design session is, and how that can help you and the steps involved in that. And so it's a lot of discovery that I do, and then whiteboarding, asking questions, because a lot of it's going to change on what their skill sets are going into that. What products are they already using on there? What's their particular use case, the size, the speed, and the type of the data? So you draw out this architecture. You don't even talk about products until the very end. And in this book, I don't even talk about products. It's all vendor neutral because these concepts apply no matter what technology you're using. And so spend the time up front to avoid those mistakes and find some experts or gain enough knowledge that you can understand all these architectures. Because in the end, you're going to choose bits and pieces of each of them. You're not going to just have one boilerplate template that you're going to use. It's going to be a combination of things. So become familiar and understand what a data lake is and a relational data warehouse is, and even get into things like star schemas and Kappa architectures to know if that's going to apply for your situation.
Gotcha. And so you mentioned ELT, ETL, right? Extract, transform, load, extract, load, transform. You mentioned those. Data ingestion is involved, right, in this. It's a big part of this. Can you talk about some best practices for ensuring that you're not only doing this efficiently, but bringing in some very reliable data?
Yeah, I would say the first part is documenting all the sources that you're going to bring in. And is this a migration or is it a greenfield in there? And even if it's a migration, take those sources and then pick out all the sources that you weren't able to put in there because your on-prem system didn't handle it, for example. And then say, not only what I have now, but I'm going to want to use in the future because you want to build something that's going to last a while. I've had customers that they would document everything. And then I say, well, are you going to do any real-time stuff? No, why would we do that? I don't know, IoT? Oh, well, maybe we could put IoT device information in there. Or maybe we can pull in social media feeds because we want to know what people are talking about our company in there. And like, that's a good idea. Okay, well, that needs to be taken into consideration. And so you have all these sources now and in the future. And then you have to think about, and this could be something you can discuss for many days, is how am I going to ingest all this data? Because even if you say, well, put it on a data lake, okay, well, how much data are you going to put in there? And if you're doing something now that maybe is on-prem and you're batch uploading it once a day, once every night, well, that could be easy in your situation if you have a data center and the servers are sitting next to each other. Well, now, if you're going to put stuff in the cloud and you're migrating or uploading every day multiple terabytes, what is your pipeline between that? And if it's a slow pipeline and you try to do it all night, it may take too long. So maybe you break it up in chunks. Maybe you have to compress it. Maybe you have to buy a bigger pipeline. And then maybe you have to do instead of a flush and fill, you do incremental updates to it. And okay, now how are you going to know what's changed since the last time you did that particular ETL pipeline or ELT pipeline. So all of these things come in the situation. And that's where you have to understand the size, the speed, and the type of your data, because now the ingestion piece gets more complicated, especially when you're moving in the cloud. And are you set up to build a solution that can handle any data, no matter that size, speed, or type?
Yeah. So you mentioned documenting all the data sources, right? So a lot of the projects that we've worked on, including our producer, Swepta, right? We've worked on these very large integration projects where we're tapping into multiple data sources. You know, there's so many different data sources out there. Can you discuss some of the challenges that you face and some things that people need to consider when they're trying to integrate data from all these disparate data sources?
Yeah, and I have to stress, there is no easy button.
No, there is not. Copilot.
Data warehousing is complicated. It's time consuming.
We can copilot all the things.
I kid.
No, go ahead.
That's good. I like that. It's copilot. All of those can help accelerate it, but
yeah,
it only can go so far. And
sure,
even a new technology, people just say, well, we got virtualization software and just buy our product. There's a lot that goes on with getting a data warehouse built, no matter what technology. This is one of the challenges. You have all these sources, and maybe there's similar data. I have CRM, ERP, and they got customer data. And I'm pulling in this customer data from all these different systems. Well, where am I going to pull them into? Maybe you have to have a common data model that you're going to build. And you're going to take all these systems that all have customer data, but some have fields that others don't, and vice versa. So I have to come up with this common data model. That could be a challenge right there. There are industry data models you could buy, but it's still not, that's a shortcut process. But it's still time consuming to pick out the model, customize it to your needs, and then map everything from the source to the target. And that right there, you can spend weeks doing that. And then you have to go like, well, is this data actually clean? Because everybody on the source will go, yeah, data's clean, it's fine. And then you go like, why are birth dates in the future or 200 years old? Oh, well, the person entering it had to put something in there, so they just put everything in there, anything at all in there. So now you're like, okay, now I have to clean the data. And so many times I've been with customers, and I always place a bet that the data is going to need to be cleaned. And they would argue with me, and I say, wait till we get into it. And yeah, you see all these weird things. Now yeah, we got to clean the data, put it to a common data model, and oh, by the way, now we have to master the data because we have customer data, and it'd be great if everybody's had the same names, but it may be James Sarah in one and James Vincent Sarah in the other and James Sarah Jr. in another. We have to know that those are the same people and create a golden record, because the last thing you want to have happen is you go through all this work, you build a system, you send the report to an end user, and the first thing they say is, why is James Sarah listening here multiple times? That's really the same person. You've lost their trust, and right away you're off on a bad foot. So you got to master the data. That's another thing in there. I got to master it. I got to clean it. I got to have a common data model. All that takes time. As great as technology is, it's going to help, but it comes down to just pen to paper at times and building out these solutions and getting it right the first time. So you have to spend the time mastering and cleaning the data to get the end user have confidence in what you're building.
I'm going to come back to that mastering data. I'm going to come back to that in just a second. But, you know, on the same line of, you know, data ingestion and data integration, you know, what you mentioned, incremental refresh, right? Incrementally loading data into your model. What are some other common approaches for data processing, like batch and real time, and how would they affect the overall architecture?
Yeah, and that's could be a potential big difference is batch and real time.
Batching
means at night I have these records, I'm just going to upload them and get the day's results and put them in there. And you can build a system that can easily handle, even if it's a lot of data, landing in a data lake, no problem. Even a relational data warehouse in there. But now you have streaming data.
Yes.
Which could be 10 records a second. It could be a million records a second. You should see IoT devices in there. Can that technology handle it? Now you get into products like in Microsoft World, event hubs, IoT hubs, Azure Stream Analytics to filter the data, all these technologies that you wouldn't need in a batch environment, but you would need in a streaming real-time environment in there. So that's one of the first questions I ask. And the discovery is you need real-time streaming, because that's going to add a different complexity and products in there. And so that becomes one. And then if you get into the incremental, is the source system have something in place like a timestamp? And I'd love to say, like, they always have timestamps, but you look in there and you're like, uh-oh, no timestamps. Is there some ID?
Yeah.
And you're like, there's nothing on here. I mean, no. I still deal with customers who got mainframes on there. So how are we going to determine what's changed since the last time we run the batch? So that runs a whole other set of a can of worms that you have to work through.
Yeah, you just generate a hash over every column in the table and do a hash in your destination and then match it up. That's going to be really performant. I get it. Okay.
Yeah.
But going back to master data. And so when I hear master data management, you know, it leads me to this concept of data governance that we often think about when something goes wrong. Right. When something goes wrong, somebody makes the wrong decision. But tell me, how does data governance play a role in data architecture, and how something really important? How can the organization ensure data quality and security and, most importantly, compliance?
Data governance is so huge, and most customers do not put enough thought into it. And when I do an architect design session, I say, get one takeaway from this is you need to block out a lot of time to think about data governance, because it involves security, data quality, even making coming up with rules that people clean the data all the same. I don't want somebody to have a system and they're using two digits for the state and the other one's using the full state. That's going to have all these problems in there. So you have to come up with all these rules, especially when you get in some of these architectures. There could be different groups now decentralized and doing their own data cleaning. They better be using the same rules in there. They better be using the same security on there.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're going to have a giant mess. And the idea is that we have to set up maybe a center of excellence to do all this. And failure happens. It's very rare that it's technology. It's the people in the process on that. And there are whole books on people in process and governance that you need to go through. Because being in IT almost 40 years, all the projects I've seen fail, and 98% of the time, it was the people, not the technology.
Yeah, that's a true statement.
On
true
that.
Statement.
Yeah. And so you got to think through this, because if you don't have governance, then if you're a big company, you could be on the front page of Wall Street that there has been a security breach. When you're copying all this data, now you're exposing more vulnerable points. So do you have the data governance in place for security? Are you, and I deal with the government, so they're coming out with data reports that are critical to not only people making decisions off them that could affect millions of dollars, but lives.
Yeah.
And so that data's got to be clean.
Yeah.
And not to mention when we're talking about working with NASA, and they can't have any mistakes in the data that they're using. And so do I have the governance in place to make sure that I'm successful and not have security breaches and do have that clean data? And so think through the organization you want to set up for that, the people you want to get involved and get training and all that. And I find a lot of customers, they don't know what they don't know. So it's part of my job is just to educate them that you should go look down this path or be aware of this product or look at this best practices. So when you're building a solution, you're not on the front page of Wall Street.
Yeah, I find often that it's great when there's a liaison sitting between IT and the business that can talk both languages, right? Because it's easier for you as the architect to find that subject matter expert in that area to work with IT to ensure that you're implementing those rules and coming up with those guidelines and things like that. It's just amazing. Yeah. And so one of the areas that I love to talk about it is performance and scalability, right? Performance and scalability. And you and I know, you know, when we start working on these projects, you just have like a tiny bit of data, a couple of million rows, and then it's a billion rows in this thing. So how does scalability and performance considerations influence the design and implementation of these data architectures, especially, and I like this point, and especially in the era of big data, right? Large volumes of data.
Yeah, and performance and scalability is something we could probably sit around for a couple hours and discuss that. And I tend to try to work backwards with thinking like, well, how is this data going to be used? And if you come and tell me that I'm just going to create these reports and print out things, then okay, well, if it takes a few extra minutes or hours, maybe it's not a big deal. But if you come and say, I'm going to have a dashboard and people are going to be slicing and dicing, and maybe they got to make a decision that literally could be affecting people's lives, they can't be slicing and dicing and it's taking 10 seconds in between each.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, we need to have, that's our SLA that we need to meet. So let's backtrack now and come up with a solution on that. Of course, Power BI's got many options, and that's where it gets complicated and where people smart like you come in and say, these are all the ways you can make that faster. And so we got to think that. And then, okay, now can we build a solution that is going to get that performance on there and have that clean data on there and be scalable to handle more and more data types and size of data as it comes in there and not crash after a certain amount of time. So then it gets into not only the architectures, and maybe we need to think of distributing and federating it and scaling differently, but then not only technology-wise, then people-wise on that. And so the idea is, and you kind of hit on this before, is then we have to have people, if they're in IT, do they know the business well? Or if they're in the business and they're doing stuff as a shadow IT, do they know the technology well enough on there? So you have to have that combination. And then when you get down to the tools, a lot of it comes down to the people using the tools. Do they know what they're doing? Do they have that expertise? I mean, and obviously using Power BI, and I was a DBA for many years, you see people write these horrendous queries and you're like, oh my God. And then they're like, well, we could solve it by scaling up the hardware. And you go like, no, just put an index on it or aggregate the data.
That's right.
And when I was a DBA, I became familiar with the SQL Server kill command because you have people like, what are you doing? You're overwhelming everything in there. And so then it becomes, do you have the people with the technical chops to go and look at this model, this star schema, or they may even not know about a star schema. You're like, okay, let me educate you on why you have a star schema.
So you
have to do all these decision points in there, and you need to have the smart people in there to recognize when things could be made more performant, more scalable.
Yeah. You mentioned SLA, right? The service level agreement. It's critical because you can easily, IT often assumes, oh, it just needs to be this. But when you go talk to the business, they help set the playing field for what, you know, the performance needs to be, what the scalability needs to be based on that service level agreement. All right. So we talked about all ingestion, data warehouses, data lakes, you know, scalability. But if I'm designing a data architecture, what tools and technologies are commonly used in these modern data architectures from your perspective, and how do they contribute to the overall effectiveness of the system? What do you use, James?
Nothing beats a good old-fashioned whiteboard on that. That's always what I start out with. And I love this Surface Hub on that. And you work in front of customers, you ask them questions, and you just start drawing on the whiteboard in there. And that gets a great picture for customers, and it's easy to modify it and do things like taking parking lot items in there for things you can't cover in that day. So start out with a great whiteboard and then have the right people in the room for the discussion on that. And a lot of times that involves the business users. And that's changed a lot over the last 10 years. It used to be just talk to IT. Now it's sometimes reversed. Talk to the business. They're going to tell you what they want and need, and then you're going to give them a solution. They're going to go to IT and say, go and build this.
And
a lot of times they have the budget for it, and you're not pushing. Sometimes you get resistance with IT. It's like, oh, there's another thing on our plate. But with the business users, they see the value of it. They get buying, they get executive support, and then they get an IT involved. And you're also getting business involved earlier, so they feel like they're part of the process, as opposed to, and I've seen this a lot of times, I'm in IT, I go off and build something, I give it to the end users. Everybody hates change. So they're going to be like, okay, why are you making me do this? And the first thing they do is point out some mistake and like, you don't know what you're doing. This is terrible. You made things worse. If you get them involved early and you get them excited, then when something comes out, they're going to be much more interested in using it. And they feel like they're a part of it. And if they see a mistake, they're like, okay, no big deal on that. So now you've got their Biden. So always get them early.
Yeah.
And then those tools come in place is then, especially with some of the products now like Fabric, man, in lightning speed, you can do a POC.
Yeah.
Or even a Power BI, you can go in there and you mock it up. So instead of going to the business users and say, let's write on paper all your requirements, you can go, hey, you go mock it up in Power BI or Fabric. It's pretty easy to do. I'll just go base it on that. And maybe if you need a little help, I'll jump in there. But those products have gone a long way and to starting very quickly in there. So now you get something that they can see on paper, that's not just on paper, And then you show them the art of the possible. Because if they're just using Excel and you're just like, what do you want? They're going to be like, oh, another column in Excel. Well, have you seen Power BI? No, show me. And you can see their brain just go, and oh my God, I didn't know that was possible. Can you do this? And now they're getting excited and you're getting more relevance for them of what they're going to use when you build a solution.
Yeah. A lot of times I tell people the most effective tool is communication. You talk to the business, man, you get you a strong executive sponsor, you'll probably have the likelihood of that project succeeding just went up, right? Okay.
So exactly.
Can you share some examples of successful implementations of data architectures in real-world organizations, along with the challenges they face and some of the lessons they learn?
There's plenty of that inside and outside of Microsoft.
It doesn't matter. Just give us one.
I left Microsoft briefly and went to UI and built a data fabric.
Wow.
And it winded up going really well. And what made it successful was, to your point, communication and understanding what the end users want and getting involved in the loop and building out something. And of course, it was an Azure that could handle that data amount of size, speed, and the type. Above everything, it was the people in the process put it in place. And then getting the smart people to make the right technical decisions on that. And then the communication with Azure going along with all the end users that are going to use the system was critical in building out this data fabric. And then with the technology was making sure that you get the right people involved, that the product that you're using is being in the right way and being very performant. Because there's a lot of little knobs here and there, and you've probably seen it with people do some POC, and it's like, this is taking 5 hours. And you're like, why is this taking 5 hours?
Yeah.
And they want to badmouth the product when you go like, well, you should have put this index here or did this. And they go like, oh, well, we had no idea you can do that. And, you know, we've got the product team involved sometimes, and they do the same thing. Like, there's all these knobs in there, and you got to know how to tune them to make it proper. And so, but that just comes down to educating yourself or bringing in people who know about those knobs and can get you the performance you need.
Yep. All right. So looking ahead in the future, looking ahead to tomorrow, what trends do you foresee in the evolution of data architectures and how might they shape the future of data management and analytics?
As you're aware, the technology, especially at Microsoft, moves at such an incredible pace. It's so hard to predict the future. And what I try to do to minimize that with customers is explain not only what they have that is available now, but what Microsoft is working on, which not everybody can get. But then, so then you're able to share with them and prevent where they go a few months into what they're building. Why don't you tell them about this new product on that? And so keeping up to date with what's out there and then what's coming. And I think to be the most successful or understand what's the future is understand the past trends. And to do that, you have to be old like me and to say, I've seen this before. And when you get to things like the data mesh, you're like, okay, this is just rewrapped in a new cool name on that. So understanding history so you don't repeat those same mistakes. And then it comes down to with trying to predict things is understand human nature that people go back and they retry things. And if I had to look at what's going to change the future of data architectures, data management is open AI.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to think just over a year ago, this wasn't even around. And I'm working on a blog about this is we know open AI, but most people know well enough to understand you can take unstructured data, text data, and get all the sort of answers you want. Can we go and take structured data and feed that into open AI? And so that gets into taking data to answer questions directly from that, but also OpenAI and that's in the future, but be using it today to build solutions on that. So I'm looking at everything from just documenting automatically DAX things that just came out to here's my data, what report should I write? And oh, okay, great, that's good, write the report and I'll change the colors, to model this data, to I mentioned the common data model. Go and build a common data model and then map all my source systems to it. And that I've seen people start working on this where it looks at your source systems and says, okay, here's the common data model you should build from it. And okay, here's the mapping. And you're like, that mapping looks good on paper. Now go and write the code for it. And you're like, oh my God, a great accelerator. Now, the word of warning is that you have to, it's not going to replace jobs because you have to have the expertise to know that it's the right answer. And you have to feed it the right question, the prompt engineering. But that's a great accelerator. So I think OpenAI is going to really change our approaches to building solutions and accelerate it. Now, it won't ever be at the point where you can say, hey, OpenAI, ChatGPT, tell me the architecture I should build. Here's my situation. But it definitely can help in a lot of other areas in there and use it to educate you. It's like having an expert right next to you. It's like having a Patrick LeBlanc that's going to answer all your Power BI questions sitting right next to you. I'm just going to use ChatGPT. And you can say, pretend you're Patrick and you're a Power BI expert and I'm going to ask him questions. And, oh, by the way, here's a video that he's done before so you can see his style and then mimic that style. And now they're already coming up with video. And that may be the next thing. If it looks just like Patrick, I might really talking to him.
It may. So, James, I will say this. Not old, my friend, just mature.
I like
just
that.
Mature. So, thanks again, James. Thank you so much for coming and talking about your book. By the way, I just looked it up on Amazon. You can go get James' book out on Amazon. Everybody, run out and get a copy. Thank you for hanging out with us today. We really appreciate it. And thank all of you all out there for listening. And we hope you join us in future podcasts here at Insights Tomorrow. Have a great day. Thanks for joining us for this episode of Insights Tomorrow. Be sure to catch us next time as we continue the journey to uncover the challenges and the possibilities that organizations face every day. You can find more about the show and catch future episodes at insightstomorrow.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.